on CFRC.
And good afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up on the show today, from this year's Poets at Art Fest, four-day poetry festival. I've been doing this for several weeks now, and this is, we're getting close to the end here. You'll hear, actually, in this first hour, the final four featured readings from it. And in the first hour, the readings you'll hear are by Natalie Sorensen, Jennifer Verardi, Carolyn Kenyons, and me. And in the second hour, from still again, that same festival, the 2025 Poets at Art Fest Outdoor Festival, there were two open mics during the festival, and I've just saved those till last. So you're going to hear the first one of those this afternoon. And in it, you're going to hear readings by Don Spector, Robert Watson, Sue Bracken, Shannon, Gia Arcos. She's got an Instagram as well. Las Olas the Waves. And also Anna Johnson, Erica, and Alexa Elder. I will have time at, I don't know if I will have much time at the end of the hour. So we'll see. I might be able to get an event or a call or something in. I might have just enough time. That'll be about it. Just a top of each hour thing that I'm like to mention is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but I try to preserve it as much as I can to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. We're getting close to the end of these readings at Poets at Art Fest, as mentioned already. I am hoping that I'm going to get the last open mic session in next week. If not, it'll be the week after that. It's going to it'll be determined by how much time I have with a segment that I do want to air next week as well. Anyway, without further ado, let's just move into that last session of featured poets at this year's Poets at Art Fest festival. Tied to ArtFest Kingston. Again, you're going to hear Natalie Sorensen, Jennifer Verardi, Carolyn Kenyons, and then myself, and that will all happen uninterrupted. So here we go. Welcome back, everyone. Give yourselves a hand. You're here for the very last one of these. Coming up, and you're going to hear first Natalie Sorensen, then Jennifer Verardi, Carolyn Kenyons, and then me. So, up first, Natalie Sorensen is enjoying her retirement. Let me make sure I'm getting recorded there. Natalie Sorensen is enjoying her retirement after teaching English at St. Lawrence College for 27 years. She spends her time reading, gardening, taking photos, and working for environmental preservation and writing poetry. Let's bring Natalie up.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Bruce, for once again hosting this amazing event. Just reading in the park with the trees and the people, it's really a joy. Yeah. I'm going to start with something very old. Lowenmensch. He came to us in fragments, bits of mammoth tusk, buried for 40,000 years in the floor of a German cave. It was August 1939. Archaeologists placed them in a museum drawer and went to war. 30 years later, a figure emerged, 12 inches high, He stands on human legs, arms at his side, a lion's head, the oldest carving of animal man we know. Passed from one hand to another around the fire, his torso worn smooth, what stories were told of this creature who walked like a man, roared like a lion? Enchanted beings, fauns, satyrs, centaurs, mermaids, bird-headed gods, and choirs of angels move among us, propel our stories. He is the first. His ears prick up. His eyes look at us. He spins our magic in flickering flames, cave walls alive with shadows. We've been hearing a lot, unhappily hearing a lot lately about Iran's nuclear possibilities. So this poem's about an old nuclear disaster, the Chernobyl disaster in April 1986. You'll all remember that one. So I've written a poem called Immigrants in the Zone. And I start with an epigraph from Revelations. The third angel blew his trumpet, and a great star fell from heaven. The name of the star is Wormwood. The brown bear pads through detritus of banished swimmers, a life ring exploding kapok, shreds of a child's tattered blue bikini, crunches deep piles of splintered glass, plods through the change room into the cavernous indoor pool. Wail of glowing wind. Barn swallows fly in and out, albino streaks mottling their necks. Finding nothing of interest, the bear pushes his way down stairwells crowded with poplar trees, out onto crazy cracked pavement, sprouting pine, birch, maple, blue-gray lichen, and bushes of false indigo. Crossing the square into a high-rise, he finds a door open, enters an apartment, the kitchen empty, but for an overturned table and a birch tree sprouting through the floor. He leaves the building, treks slowly down the road into a lavender meadow, fireweed and wild asters. A herd of elk retreats as he finds a patch of ripe raspberries, settles down to feast. Not far away, 9 Asian wild horses, golden tails streaming, gallop across an open field. In the forest, boar, deer, wolves, and fox flourish in this lush zone of alienation. They cannot hear, cannot feel the hum of radiation in air, earth, and water. As if Artemis, under a sliver of moon, had slipped half-seen through the trees. Artemisia vulgaris, Chernobyl, and bitter Artemisia and absinthium, Wormwood. This one doesn't really need much introduction. It's over, love. Can't stay here. Church doors painted blue as heaven, steeple in the clouds. Portico cuts the wind, warmer through the night. Police are here, clearing us out again. Fires, they say, poisonous needles, distressing and dangerous, they say. Sleep in the shelters, they say. That's where you should be. Not me. I'm going far this time. A place by the river. Fire hidden. Only the birds to hear me cough. Only the squirrels to know my name.
Louder.
Louder?
Okay. Louder. Louder.
This is a happier poem. It's about our time together as a family where we have a home by the river. golden time. I'm quoting Zen Master Dogen, a very famous one. He founded a major sect of Zen. So the letters from Dogen are, time, just as it is being, and being is all time. It has time's glorious golden radiance. That's Dogen. So this is my poem, Golden Time. Family gathered on the airy porch, candles lit, leaves aflutter. We eat, tell our stories late into the night. In the morning, we walk the sunlit meadow, caught in the sweep of grasses spreading before us, each blade lucid, the river flashing through trees. An arch of black spruce opens before us. We enter the tunnel, hushed in shadowy green. The path winds forward and back, a labyrinth with many turns, a spiral pattern walked through ages, scratched on walls, tombs, and goddess figurines millennia old. Thoughts turn inward as we walk, reach past memories, circle back to the present at a simple cut stone. We pause in the comfort of shade, the breath of trees. Unwind the path at last, gently step into the meadow, awake to these green shadows, this bright grass, these yellow daisies. This one's a poem about my grandmother. It's called Her Stories. My grandmother died 7 decades ago. She is slipping now into anonymity, that sea which swallows us all. Her mother, her sister, meadow grass, blue jays, sea bass, stars. Soon, no one will remember her alive. I am reading her life record bound in a big red book. So many stories. A new dress at 5. Running upstairs to her mother's mother, announcing, "Your breakfast tea is served." At 8, fitted for morning clothes, soft new gloves for her father's funeral. Showing off her firstborn, Rosie in his long, lacy dress, sending 4 sons in uniform to the trenches of World War I. As she recedes farther into that sea of forgetfulness, all we have are her stories. Like cresting waves, they send a spume of white foam against the dark. Last one is called The Ancient Mirror, and it's a meditation on a short poem written by Liang Xie of Tengshan. He's a Chinese Chan master. His dates are 807-869. And his short poem is, "Sleeping through dawn, an old woman encounters the ancient mirror and clearly sees a face no other than her own." That's Tengshan. My poem, The Ancient Mirror. Awakening, she watches a sparrow flutter through dawn-lit grasses, spray rainbows through chilly air. Chickadees swoop from feeder to tree. A cardinal carols from high cedar branches. These days, her walk is slow. Lawns and shrubs take their sweet time coming into view. She wraps the well-worn shawl of her neighborhood around her shoulders, looks up, and there's the moon, pale white orb floating in celestial spheres, edge dissolving into the blue. Her neighbor walks his black Newfoundland. She smiles. bends to caress his big head. He shakes all over, wags his tail. She takes up her journey to end of day. Late sun flaring through yellow maples, leaves gently falling, gilding the grasses, gilding the ancient mirror. Thank you.
Let's give her another hand. Thank you, Natalie. Up next, Jennifer Verardi is a returning poet to Poets at Art Fest and is deeply grateful for the beautiful community of artists that have welcomed her with open arms. She is currently working on two new poetry collections, which she plans to release before the end of 2025. Her previously published works and updates on upcoming projects can be found at jenniferdonverardi.ca. Jennifer writes from the heart and is honored to have a space in the world for her poetry. She hopes her pieces offer light, reflection, and inspiration to those who read them. Let's bring up Jennifer.
I am going to start with a little new piece that I have just been writing over the past few days, because we recently had to say goodbye to my little lion boy, and I don't have kids, so my cats are like my babies. And then I was going to read a piece from one of the new books that I'm working on. These are just little, what are they called? I'm sorry, I can't think right now. Proofs. So we'll do that. And I've got some Canadian Tire bills in there to remember where I put them. I do really love hip-hop, so that resonated a little bit. This one coming up, it'll be I'll probably just self-publish them with Amazon, so you can just Google my name and find them there. This one will be my fourth book, called Press Against Fire, and then the other one is actually a compilation of poems that I've shared with Bruce and CFRC on the Finding a Voice and the Journey Continues show. So I wanted to make that into its own little collection. Anyway, so my little lion, he was 3 months shy of turning 8. So we lost him way too soon. But yeah, okay. My little lion, you're going to survive this. You're going to get by this, and then you're going to be thriving. I sang to you and to myself as much as I could, imagining your best health. But then the universe turned its wheel of chaos, not with malicious intent, but it feels like a cruel trick. It took you away far too soon, left me in pain, leaving you in that room. What do I do without my shadow? How do I know where to go? Wondering when I can follow, hoping you could still return. How do I know where the sun is if I can't see you in it? What do I do without my shadow? Why and where did our time go? I search for answers in the hallway alone. I search for your murmurs looking around our home. What am I going to do without my shadow? How will I ever sleep without your little feet? Do you know that I choose you in every single lifetime, no matter how short, because you were mine to watch shine? I will choose you in every single lifetime, because I am strong enough to lose you, and I know you were always meant to be mine. What am I going to do now without my shadow there, when it hits me hard, and I scream out to the stars that this just isn't fair? You and me, we found each other in the dark. You and me, we made life a living dream. You and me found true, deep love, and I hope you know that you are more than enough. I choose to believe that when you crossed over and found the Rainbow Bridge, there you saw my other, and you knew his love. So then you asked him this, how do we visit Mom from above? He already loves you, and he shows you the way back to us. But what am I going to do without my shadow? My whole soul misses you, and I begged for you to not go. The universe had a different plan, and I hate saying it was time, so maybe it was something else, my little lion. I know you were trying. Maybe now you are flying through the stars and straight back into my deep, deep heart. You are loved beyond words, beyond stars. You sat with me, demanding nothing. You listened to every word I had to say and were the best family I could have asked for. You were my sweet, handsome little lion, and I'll see you again someday. In our big garden, by our little cottage, where we'll live together forever and eternity. And we'll build the dreams that we talked about. I'll keep living for you because I know you want me to. And I'll see you again someday, my sweet little lion. Cannot wait to see your face, my sweet little lion. So, probably go through and edit that one at some point, but thanks for listening. Life, sure, we're all here for, you know, that we love to think about life and engage in life and experience life. This one is kind of like a prayer to the stars. Show me how good it can be. It feels like the rug keeps getting pulled out from beneath my feet, and the shock is like vicious lightning strikes, leaving me on the floor bleeding. Show me how good it can get. I cry out to the universe. Show me what I haven't seen yet, and I say it from my chest. Show me the meaning of all this pain, and show me why it all changed. But still, I wait for it to catch up. I keep your name close, deep in my heart, but still, I wait for patience to pay off. Keep my dreams dancing, just waiting to start. People say that I should get out of my head, to stop imagining something else instead. But I feel they don't know how I'm always searching for home, stumbling onto new shores, that feeling of your heart breaking when it's already in pieces. I cry again to the universe, what a cruel twist of fate you gave. And I curse at the stars just because I'm afraid. But I still kneel in silence, learning how to pray, trusting in the rhythm of where it is all taking me. But still, I wait for it all to catch up to me, and I keep your love close deep in the heart of me. The memory hurts the day that you left me, and the words that you said, the rubble you left on me. Still, I wait for it to catch up, for the gates to open, for the flowers to bloom, for the blossoms to yield, for the garden to grow, for my heart to heal, and for my dreams to come true. I trust you, I swear, I scream out to the sky. This just isn't fair when we had to say goodnight. I want it all back, those precious times. I try to believe as I write out my little rhymes. Promise me that there's a reason. Promise me it's just a season. Promise me I'll see you soon. And I know I'll find it one day in the garden where it all blooms. One day under starlight, I'm so glad I knew you. I'm gonna put those down. So those are kind of just newbies I've been working on a little bit. I'm gonna put that one down too, because I'm actually not reading from it. I've got two in here, and I didn't time myself. Okay, thanks, Bruce. He's kind of the best, right? Okay. This one is called How We Were Taught. I was taught to cross the street if there was a man walking ahead of me. I was taught to keep my house key in between my fingers for safety. This is what the world taught me. I was taught I should not walk home alone at night, even under streetlight. I was shown how to damage a face in order to get myself away somewhere safe. This is what the world showed me. I was told to be cautious of men who gave me things. They might later pull at those strings. I was always reminded that I was seen as an object, which is confusing when you need attention you cannot seem to get. I still cross the streets sometimes, but I often stay home for nights. I will still keep my key in my hand when I'm alone. Never underestimate a person's tragic soul. This is how I see it. I have always refused to be walked home after dark, because I'm quick on my feet and I'm stronger than I look. I've not had to use my fist to defend, but I still know how if it should happen. And this is how I protect myself. I won't pick up a hitchhiker, especially if I'm alone. And I might not open the door if someone needs help. I've known evil that has fooled smart minds, and they never stop to hurt your life. I've known damage done with unknowing hands and words that echo in time like new trends. I can still feel my scars, though I try to cover them up. Do not be fooled by our softness. We are ready to rise up. Okay, I think I'm probably keeping time okay. One more. Okay, I talked too much, but it's fine. This one is called 300 Verses, and it's kind of a breakup poem, so we got a little bit of that in here today. After 300 verses, you became an apostrophe. Don't remember the words you used to talk down to me. Glad you like that. Your fears are tied up in your tired old game, and that's where they're gonna stay. Tucked away in my dreams, alone as I walk a beach, looking for nothing, I met someone true. With my big love and deep hoping, I forgot all about you. After all of the pain that I gained from your lies, I shimmered into the sun and made my own life. You burned a hole through my guard, my golden heart. You broke in and stole all of my precious, precious art. But after 300 verses, you became an apostrophe. I'll never understand the idea you had of me and all of the excuses you had to not be a we. Although you moved in with me and then asked me with your heart to make a home with you too. I turned my life around and back into a dream for me. Even with your height, you still look so small. And that's how you change when you watch your love fall. After 300 verses, you became an apostrophe. I'll find myself being held by someone who possesses enough strength to love me. And I'll watch the tears that felt, that they turned into memories. And none of it will hurt me again. I'll receive love letters from somebody who sees my sacred and rare heart that is true. And they'll hold tightly onto my heart that is fair. And I'll never again think of you. After 300 verses, you became an apostrophe, and I walk the beaches with someone who truly loves me. He'll make all my worry disappear into a thankful epilogue that won't include you. After 300 verses, you became an apostrophe. You'll look back at the lessons, and you'll regret how you treated me. I walk the beaches with someone new, and he's gonna hold me so much better than you. After 300 verses, you became an apostrophe. Maybe one day you'll notice, maybe one day you'll see how love's not a game, and maybe you'll find a we, but it won't ever be with me. Thank you. Thank you, Bruce.
Give Jennifer another hand. Up next, Carolyn Kenyons. was born and raised in Northeast Philadelphia. She has authored two books of poetry, Before the Big Bang Makes a Sound and Coupling. In addition to poetry, Carolyn writes essays, reviews, and short fiction. Two of her short stories were listed for the Best Fiction of 2021 and 2023. She writes on a myriad of topics, ranging from pop culture to true crime on Medium. And her third book of poetry, Lost in the Bardo, is due out this fall. American poet Peter Campion writes of it, this is quote, "I don't know of another book of poetry that portrays middle age with a blend of humor and deep emotion. These poems combine spiky wit and acute observation with the vulnerable openness of a voice forever searching. Contemporary poetry is larger and more alive for this superb collection." Let's bring up, end quote, bring up Carolyn.
Do you mind keeping track for me?
Yeah, I will.
I have contacts in and I still... Oh, I can see better. Okay. The first poem I'm going to read today is Lost in the Bardo, and my book's coming out in late fall. 2 years ago, the phone call arrived, tragic as a gut punch. You know, that call. That call every estranged child dreads. One I could never prepare for. Even after being asked by a Manhattan therapist, the same therapist who'd inform me that my sleeping inside of a sleeping bag atop the celery green shag carpet floor in my parents' bedroom, curled up next to my mother's bedside like a loyal Labrador, was actually something called enmeshment. Strange behavior that could be named. For 7 years, my father would treat me like a perpetually annoying cock block. Perhaps my mother's goal all along. "Will you go to her funeral?" he asked me in one of our sessions. My lack of an immediate answer would later morph into a hypothetical poem. A poem about going home after the dreaded hypothetical phone call from the brother whom I haven't seen in well over a decade. Not because of a lack of love, but rather due to the cringy social awkwardness that existed in all our familial relationships. In this hypothetical poem, I would betray myself as a total stoic. Didn't cry, didn't scream, before taking the last poetic flight out of LaGuardia. And when the imaginary plane circled the Hudson, the perfect trajectory to study the river, also embedded with secrets, I'll sit and stare out the oval window, looking down at the watery graves of those poor souls, dismembered and discarded like Angel Melendez, the New York City club kid murdered and dumped in the Hudson by Michael Adlig, who'd later be played by Macaulay Culkin in Party Monster. I digress. The first boyfriend I ever brought home told me my father's eyes looked dead in all his photographs. In 1997, I read a short story by Will Self called The End of the Relationship, the last story from the book Gray Area, about an emotional typhoid Mary who'd make all her lover's eyes go dead just like my father's. Maybe that was who my mother was. Maybe that's who I am by extension of her. I'm not gonna do this. An emotional typhoid Mary, an effed up folly ado, a loyal Labrador lost in the Bardo. I don't know. I promise there's a lot of humor in my book as well. I promise you that. What has become of the first marriage? Whenever I see a mature-looking couple between early to mid-60s walking hand in hand with that obnoxious look of late middle-age love, I immediately know, stronger than suspicion, that this is a second marriage, possibly a third. Their bodies still spry, with the exception of their backs, now weary, slightly leaning into a semblance of a cursive C. It's at the garish fluorescent lit diner, known for their early bird specials, where I spot them next, sitting side by side in the same maroon colored polyurethane pleather booth, reminding me for a moment of that yellow tinged photograph from a history book back in middle school of a pioneering couple sitting side by side as the husband mans a dust-covered wagon while his wife holds a long double-barrel shotgun across her lap during the era of the California Gold Rush. I ponder, wondering why they just can't sit across from each other, like the rest of us, disgruntled, cynical couples, well-seasoned in realism and romance, knowing full well the value of separate booths and bedrooms, the value of personal space. Perhaps we can blame it on raising multiple children, notwithstanding the later care of elderly parents before the unexpected crash and subsequent depletion of your Roth IRA and 401k and her failure to launch rage-filled man-child who turned us prematurely gray in our 30s and who still keeps us up at night with endless worry. This is the kind of tumult that depletes and desolates first marriages into abysmal shreds. It's as if some imaginary sci-fi vortex has sucked every ounce of lust and desire clean from the depths of our loins, leaving our love cagey and bone dry. Now, when you reach out your retired manicured hand across the tabletop, across the universe, it feels oddly foreign and cold as a dead fish with that thousand-yard glaucoma cloudy gaze finally yielding to its fate. What time? Okay, regression at the middle-age soiree. Getting old ain't for sissies, Betty Davis. You're surprised when Blythe Monk, your daughter's soft-spoken preschool teacher from years ago who always smells of Chanel No. 5, pulls out a sandwich bag full of neatly wrapped joints from her coach purse. For a moment, you think she's holding a bag full of bang snaps, those white twist-tie wrapper explosives you once threw on the ground with glee when you were a child decades ago. You reach in and take two bang snap joints, one for now, one for later. And you think, this is middle age regression, while standing in the midst of middle school parents at the soiree, where Chardonnay and sangria keep flowing for hours. Your thoughts ruminate. My husband is sleeping in the guest bedroom, says it's because of my snoring. My daughter hates me. I get side cramps every time I bend over to zip up my favorite black suede boots. I hate my life. You can feel your defenses fall as trees do, loud and disastrous. Next, you're flirting with the widower neighbor with the meticulous lawn, the retired tight-lipped CIA agent who jogs every single day at the crack of dawn, no matter the weather. His self-discipline shames you. His self-discipline shames everyone at the party. You drink sangria until your mouth has a port wine-stained mustache. You twerk on the widower with a nice lawn. You twerk on the soft-spoken Blythe Monk. You twerk atop the breakfast bar until you fall down hard. I'm Italian from Philly, okay? Talk with my hands. Okay, I'm gonna try my best not to cry at this one because this is really hard. And this is called Cats in the Cradle. This is gonna be so hard. But it's a really powerful poem. My black jade eye cat and I press our noses squarely against the coolness of the kitchen screen window, but for totally different reasons. His out of infinite pining for feral freedom, hunting mice and birds with reckless abandon, before his estrangement and ultimate rescue for the safe, mundane life of an inside cat, always ready to bolt. And mine for relief from a searing hot flash while stirring a large pot of homemade sauce where I add sugar to cut into the acidity of garden variety tomatoes. Just the two of us, side by side, almost touching. Side by side, our heads leaning, almost touching, while we stare out into the vast open darkness of the backyard. My life has begun to morph to the mercy of middle age, to the mercy of teenage daughters and with their scorched earth eye rolls, and ignored text messages after spamming their phones with sentimental mother-daughter reels and memes, a declaration of my love, despite the obvious thud from the time in their lives when I was present, but not fully present. Long enough for their validated resentment of me to seed and take root, then flourish like Mimosa Boudica, a type of foliage known to quickly fold and droop whenever touched. If anything, middle age offers perspective, however precarious, like the time I swallowed a fly whole while riding a city bike along the Gowanus Canal as a result of my mouth breathing. Now I'm learning new terms like active listening, which according to the family therapist means being able to hold the ball while listening to difficult truths without reacting, just holding the ball as heavy as regret. Thank you so much.
Give another hand to Carolyn.
Do you want to be introduced?
No, that's fine. Before I read, though, just something I do traditionally is, in the past, we've heard some wonderful readings in all the sessions. And again, in this one, please, like I do at the end of every session, give Natalie, Jennifer, and Carolyn another hand. You're too kind. Thank all of you. You're very kind. I'm one of those poets, too, that appreciates just to read through and hold off on any applause. If you think it deserves it at the end, then that's cool. It's just there's kind of a flow thing for me. Anyway, the first poem is called Sometimes. Sometimes I wonder if what I write might be becoming out of favor, less relevant, old, archaic, ancient, or if it's lost its place in general with a greater, faster moving world. It's as if, in a way, music becoming from a different age, time, ages ago, less popular now. Even the package, the book cover, more landscape than vibrant or thrilling or shocking or clever. My words becoming again as if analogous to music, like classical music, with its much smaller group of followers, admirers than the popular songs and rhythms of the day. And in this, I am not comparing myself to any of those great composers, no. Not like Beethoven, Bach, Rachmaninoff, Chopin, Mozart, Haydn, Brahms, Mendelssohn, no. I am so very much less, more like a once young student of theirs, perhaps. Or not even a student, but one of those students' friends. Or one of their long-distant cousins. Or not even any of those, but instead in a concert hall after a classical music performance had ended and all the people there gone home and all the musicians' chairs on that stage had been picked up and stacked away. Perhaps I then am the janitor. In that, as if infinite silence alone, sweeping the floor with endless compositions, songs, music, never before heard, ever and gently floating about in my head. Rails. Westbound train boarded this morning. No destination, no getting off. Nearly a continent away, taking it all the way to the West Coast. I'm anonymous, a number. Ticket number 20, Via Rail, Canada, Economy, Car 4, Window, Toronto 2, Vancouver. That's who I'll be for a few days. At least tens of thousands of others have been the same. Same name, same seat, same train, same car, same ticket. I boarded alone. I will ride this rail, disembark the same. This trip isn't about people. Just country landscapes, the closeness of it, days of it, four. Never even considered the Not Enough airplane with its glossy cover magazine ride showing everything and nothing. A few hours short expedition without heart, memoryless after. I need something more. Want a trip with a pulse. I will disembark on the West Coast, stay maybe a day or two, then get back on board. Come back the whole way again, alone and not. On writing poetry. You will not write your best poetry on paper, especially not a computer. You will seemingly write it instead with invisible ink on the backs of wild horses and ponies, or in a pattern remnant of tea leaves on a feathered tail of a dove, or in colored braille on the wings of a butterfly, a dragonfly. Those are the poems that will come back to you, each of them believing in you as much as you believed in them. For a moment, I was standing in a sheltered full glass bus stop. It was Tuesday, early to mid-morning, and was a minus 20 degrees counting the wind chill. A young woman came in, probably on her way to work, an appointment perhaps, immaculately dressed. Beautiful winter coat showing just a bit of a burgundy-colored scarf with cashmere sweater beneath. Black slacks cut perfectly, ending just a half an inch above the heel of her shoes. And as she sat down, she reached down the left leg of her pants to its bottom and with the index finger of her right hand flicked off what might have been a flake of snow or something else picked up on her walk there. That's the only thing out of place, now fixed. I watched the all of this, and I know that somewhere, say, 200 years from now, some immaculately dressed Someone immaculately dressed in that time will arrive somewhere, sit down, and flick a piece of something from the bottom of their pant leg as another person stands there, watching it all, and is instantly lost in wonder with images of time, with something they can't quite explain, and filled then with that small idea, that twinge of a thing misplaced, but does not know what or why. Watching. I sit in a hospital cafe, looking through its outside walls of windows. See an older man, having already walked down a back hall, out another door, and now outside, walking past me toward the parking lot. I'm guessing from where he earlier came. He's carrying in his left hand a cane, horizontally, and under his arm, two small white bags that in very noticeable letters say, "Patient's belongings." I am guessing he's taking first the bags and the cane to his car. And I'm so hoping to see him come back from there to assist his partner or sibling or mother or father or daughter, son, grandchild, grandfather, grandmother, friend, one of those. And he then returning, coming back, then wheeling them back in a chair toward his car. But two things I did not and do not see. First, behind the hospital, on the other side, with its engine running, a funeral director's van. Second, him coming back. We are not what we do, even less what we say. We are the conversations within us, not the superficial monologues, but the deeper dialogues between the halves, the ever two selves inside each of us. We are not the legacies we believe we are or leave behind. Those things become scattered, fluid. It is not legacy we should seek, but instead legitimacy, an ethics about us, an honesty, a compassion even. Even in those times when it is less popular, less easy. And in the end, in the all of life, truly, we are and become each more, much more, our dreams than our days. Called look at there, it's actually my final poem. So I want to thank you again, it's been a wonderful, this whole journey's been wonderful, this past 4 days, and especially this one now again this afternoon. This is my final poem. It's called Revisiting. This morning, a memory arrives in a softness and fine mist, surrounding me in an as if long awaited embrace. This memory from very, very long ago. We lived in the country then, far away from any city and far enough from even a tiny town. Often enough, we had to travel by car to anywhere. My son, our son, in that time, decades ago, just a bit more than an infant, not even toddler yet. And always on those drives, strapped into his baby seat in the back seat. Quite early on, we noticed, maybe he then 5, 6 months old, Whenever we drove somewhere, anywhere, at some point in it, he would make a hand gesture using both of his hands. He would hold up his left index finger straight up and then place his right index finger with another crossways on top of his left. He was not speaking yet, so too young to ask. And as this kept happening more and more often over at least a few months, we were baffled by what it was about. And this only happened when we were in the car. Then one day, as we were driving a longer drive to the city, to see his doctor, in fact, for just a checkup, I could see him in the car's rearview mirror doing it again. And so, for just a second, I quickly but safely, carefully turned around to see the direction his head was turned and what he was looking at. Telephone poles. And so, riddle solved. I believe we even relayed this whole story to his pediatrician that morning. But I don't think I fully understood until many years later, perhaps not even until today, just now. Joe was not simply mimicking an image. He was speaking to it, speaking with it, by assembly, learning a deeper language, connecting to and creating his work. Thank you. And you just heard the final readings from, or final featured poets' readings, I should say, that were recorded from this year's Poets at Art Fest 4-Day Poetry Festival. And in it, you heard readings by Natalie Sorensen, Jennifer Verardi, Carolyn Kenyons, and me. It is 57 minutes after 4 o'clock. I tell you what. Let's do this really quickly here, and I will be right back.
Tune in to Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Arrow McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Labs program. They'll share their stories, their insights, maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create.
Honey, another bird hit the window.
Birds hitting a window can cause severe head injuries and broken bones.
Birds cannot see glass. They can only see a tree's reflection in the window.
You should put decorations on your windows so birds do not think it is the sky.
This message was brought to you by the students of Linklater Public School Grade 4 class and Sandy Hines Wildlife Center.
And to all of those listening to the show today, my heartfelt thanks to each of you for tuning in to this hour. Also, I would like to say give my heartfelt thanks out to each of the poets in that wonderful reading that afternoon. And also those who always come out to those sessions and support and just to be there and listen. I can tell you that There was one session that was recorded. I have no idea what happened to it, and my apologies. It was the first session of that last day. I have looked all over for it, and I cannot find it. So my apologies to those poets. I have already talked to some of them. So anyway, I will continue to do follow up with that. I hope you can stay tuned. For those of you listening, you can stay tuned to the second hour today. You're going to actually hear the first of two open mics. So just to kind of close out this first hour, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Just a quick reminder that I do.